Allies to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we are approaching True Beltane and many things. We have a Beltane Zoom recording available because then we begin our council journey on Tuesday, May 9th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Celtic Trickster, Plants and Planets, The Journey from Beltane to Solstice, Courtship to Wedding. It's with me and Sean Patrick O'Donohue that we partner with what we love in nature to be its cultural agent. More information at coyotenetworknews.com. So the planet and the plants can save us if we learn to humbly cooperate. It is the waxing Buddha's full moon and a lunar eclipse for bonus points as Pluto is stationing, Mercury retrograde, quintiles Mars. I'll explain all of this. All of it is inviting us back to the garden of entheos, supportive guiding. So in some moments, our wonderful guest will join us. I'm rehosting Rachel Harris, author of Listening to Ayahuasca, one of my favorite books on ayahuasca, whose latest cultural contribution be Swimming in the Sacred, Women from the Psychedelic Underground. Lest we tame entheogens by repackaging them as therapy. Oh, get them. She writes, there is wisdom that is in danger of being lost as our legal and medical institutions embrace these extraordinary medicines. There's a Haitian proverb, when the anthropologist arrives, the gods depart. There we go. So Rachel, excuse me, I'm all moved by this, is an esteemed colleague in the entheo realms. I did love her book, Listening to Ayahuasca, although it inspired in me some, I want to talk to dead people too, yearning, takes on the issue of evil. I'm pretty sure it was when Houston Smith, a great teacher of religious traditions, was asked, do you believe in evil, evil spirits? And he replied, when I'm in South America, I do. When I'm in North America, I don't. We shall continue this conversing. So Rachel is so welcome now as we approach true Beltane, when the sun arrives at exact mid-season, 15 degrees Taurus, May 5th at 2:20 p.m., right after the full moon lunar eclipse at 1:34 p.m., Taurus Scorpio. That's when the Buddha was born and when he attains enlightenment with his back against the Bodhi tree, because no one gets enlightened without trees. Woohoo. So with true Beltane and this Buddha's full moon lunar eclipse as Pluto is stationing, it's all about let go of control and invite power into the world to animate the proffered vessel of our dedication in the traveling now. So Rachel's website is swimminginthesacred.com. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much. I have nothing to add. You've said it all.
Oh, that's adorable. No, that's adorable. So, because even just in the promo literature, as well as the innumerable, fantastic, long blurbs you get from so many notable people saying, thank you.
From my dear friends, you mean.
Well, many, many pages and pages. It's a book in itself. And Tom Cheatham, whom you turned me on to, author of Imaginal Love.
Yes.
So he says, the lives and practices of these women provide essential context, grounding, and cautions, for everyone hoping to explore the powerful healing potential of our mysterious and elusive life-giving companions. That's
yes,
so
oh,
wonderful.
Oh, the mystery.
Wait, say that again.
Yes. I said, oh, the mystery. These are the women who travel in the mysterious realms.
Yes,
it was very interesting.
Kinship.
Yes, absolutely. It was interesting to interview them because they didn't really think linearly. So I had to sort of follow their pathway of describing themselves and their lives and the work they've come to do. Most of them have been practicing underground for at least 20 years, and some of them for 30 or 40 years. So I figure in the Western world, these women are part of the underground group that know more about these entheogens than anybody else.
I mean, yes,
admittedly, the shaman in South America know more, but for the Western world, these are the women.
Right. These are all great mysteries, and I love just you know, what I'd read, I think you were here for it, but there is wisdom that is in danger of being lost as our legal and medical institutions embrace these extraordinary medicines. Even when just reading, beginning your book, which I have thoroughly enjoyed, you know, I did a little fist pump going, yes, yes, thank you. That's really great. And when I got to the part in your book when you're interviewing someone and one of the elder guides, and she says, we don't care about the family history. We don't even want to hear about it. I'm like, yes,
yes, yes, yes.
Right, right. That's
that. That was hard for me to hear as a lifelong psychotherapist.
Right, but for me, you know, finding different entheo groups and so on, you know, because it is good to journey with others. But
yes.
But so many people were stuck on, you know, my trauma, my mother was mean to me, and my it's like, yeah, but you're 60 now, you know, and I go, the gates of participating with mysterious forces to help heal the world are opening, and you're like, oh, wuzza, wuzza, wuzza. Anyway, I wanted an upgrade, which you're proffering.
Well, you know, I'm all for transformation, and that's what you're describing. Miraculous transformation. Who wouldn't be for that? And I'm also, you know, I have to speak as a psychologist, as a psychotherapist, and say, oh, look, there's some family of origin stuff that does have to be worked through. And sometimes that, you know, people live a whole lifetime before they get around to doing that. So I am a big believer in what I think of as sort of the kindergarten of psychotherapy, and that is working through the family of origin stuff. I think it's very important.
Oh, didn't mean to step on you. Do continue.
Well, what I was going to say was when people, sometimes people will go for the transformation without doing that foundational work, and then they're at risk for becoming inflated and acting out in ways that are harmful to themselves or others. And
yes.
So, you know, it's you know, I know one therapist who got in trouble because he said I had unmet needs from childhood that I hadn't taken care of. And he stopped his work with the medicines, with any of the entheogens, and he went back into therapy. And I think, you know, these times for therapy come up at different stages of life, and the entheogens can reveal a whole other layer of work that really does require what's sometimes called psychedelic integration or just plain more therapy. So, you know, I'm a proponent of both sides of it.
No, it's true. No, it's true. It's just that we love heresy. And, you know, because it was a term of praise, because it meant cross-pollinating contributor to culture so that knowledge never degrades into dogma. So we don't care about family history. We don't even want to hear about it. It's just, you know, add three drops to the brew. It was just liberating. And as you say, not the whole
yes.
thing. You know, when Carl Jung was conversing with the founder of AA, Bill Wilson was always encouraging Carl to eat magic mushrooms. And Carl said, well, you know, every time we do that with a plant, it gives us more work to do. And if I felt like I was caught up, I would. But right now, I don't need more work. You know, so that's also, we add that
that's,
to the
that's
brew,
That's a
too.
Great quote. That's a great perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's so much
that... You know, Carl Jung had another quote that he talked about in the later stages of his life, when people would come to him for analysis, for therapy. He would say, well, go work with one of my colleagues and do therapy with them. And when you're finished there, then come to me. And that's kind of the acknowledgement that there are different levels of therapy. And he was really saying, do the basic work with one of my colleagues. And then when you're ready for the transformational work, then come to me. And I think that's another way of putting the same thing.
Right. And we honor and embrace and distill and edit, you know, the whole way along. So I remember also Jung saying that he'd met a fellow who was so inflated and so unstable in his self-assessment that he felt it was, that he couldn't take it apart or be honest with the person because the whole thing would fall apart, which I don't actually sort of approve of, but approval, disapproval, who cares? You know, it was like an interesting thing because you do address this issue of inflation. And that's been my experience at many ayahuasca circles where people just got away with stuff going, Mama, I ayahuasca told me I was a great shaman and I should leave my kids and wife and go to the jungle. I'm like, no, stop.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, well, I've heard that story.
Yeah, right. The important thing. But then you're cooking it down to what's really, you know, important, and your wonderful guidelines, you know, really throughout that we want to play with. I have thousands of notes. So I hope you don't hear me shuffling them. Right. It's be very quiet.
No, I'm anxious to hear.
But you say, you know, at the end of all of your talks, you always say, listen to the message, you know, that leads to love that permeates the universe. I'm like, oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's my rule for discernment.
Yeah.
How do we separate out our ego from a larger good? And Laura Huxley talks about that in a way, and she says the challenging thing for guides is to manage their own ego, to keep their ego out of the way of the journey.
Yes. You know, there's so much in what it's so welcome that you're bringing your fierce discernment with a kind heart to our the cultural council table, going, right.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, well, it's a great aspiration that you're fulfilling. You know, and as I read your book, it's like I'm meeting so many people that I know that I'm remembering some not well. You know, Stan Groff, hey there, hey Stan, a little bit no. Some people I knew in the rainforest of Mexico with Terence McKenna, you know, who are even quoted in your book as saying, you know, people think the heroic dose is important, but those were the same people in the jungle who were like, I need more. Can somebody help?
Oh, anyway, goodness.
So we're,
well, maybe they've
we're all before
older.
That's right. Gotten older. That's right. Oh, yeah. There is value. There is value, as you say, to, and we'll get to the theme of, well, and also, as you know, in our friendship and conversing and radio, you can go anywhere you want at any time. I will aspire to, you know, ask questions, but feel free to ignore them if you want, you know. But it was so powerful. Early on, you mentioned what for me is Neptune, dreams, vision, sacred images, you know, creating the atmosphere conducive to the mystical. It's like, yes, that's important.
Oh, that's a wonderful way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, and you know, I talk about this one woman I interviewed, and I refer to her as the eldest of the elders because she's now in her late 80s. And her comment was, even if these medicines become legal, I would continue to practice underground because that's mm-hmm. where the sacred container is. And so
right.
there is this whole other world of transformational inner work that's being done that's separate from the research studies, that's quite different. And these women and the people they work with tend to use the entheogens throughout their whole lifespan. So it's not, you know, the research studies have to be cost-effective, and it's 3 months, and so, you know, maybe 6 to 10 integration or therapy sessions, and one or two journeys, and that's it. And then your symptoms should be reduced and much better. But the way these medicines are used in a sacred kind of way throughout a lifespan is that people come in and maybe do a journey once a year, once every 6 months. Maybe they bring their partner or their families who sit together. I've been in ayahuasca ceremonies where there are three generations present. I mean, that's a wonderful experience for everybody in the room. And so there's this sense of the medicines are a part of an unfolding life. And I always quote this about Albert Hofmann, who synthesized LSD. He found the LSD-25, he resynthesized it. And at the and he lived to be like 102 or 4, some very high number. But at age 97, he did an LSD trip.
Yeah,
and
I love that.
There you get a sense of, the medicines can be useful throughout a whole lifespan.
Yes, right. And, I was just going to pull up Albert Huffman, but he's disappeared. Okay, never mind. I was going to pull up his chart. But yes, tripping at the age of 97. And I want to put that on the altar of my dedication as too, going, yes. And Aldous Huxley going out on LSD that Laura, his wife, gave him, going, I'm entering the big thing. And many examples that we want to kind of pull up. But yes, the lifelong dynamic. And so much of what I'm reading in your book, Swimming in the Sacred, highly recommend it, Wisdom from the Psychedelic Underground, is super resonant and is kindling a great, our lives are spiritual detective novels, and I have a great appreciation, because when people say, how'd you ever get into astrology, I go, drugs. What I meant is plant entheogens, really, because that was true, because I was lucky enough to be part of a small temporary salon, really, that. And I was the kid who got to hang out, and we were doing responsible entheogenic use, and at the same time studying tarot and astrology and powerful, beautiful images. I'm like, oh, I'm so lucky.
Yes, in the context of serious study and work. Yeah, many of the Buddhist and meditators will talk about it was psychedelics that opened them up to meditation. So it's an old story, yeah. People's lives change after a journey.
Well, may it be so. I mean, they certainly can. And then
they
I want to bring up something that you address, from many, many different angles that I call fending off wonder. And fending off wonder can take many sneaky forms. And we just say, everything can be authentic and or a guise. One can do real work on one's family origins, or one can turn it into a repetitive story, in which case it's fending off wonder, or talking over the thing. You mentioned solitude, silence, deep inwardness.
Yes. Well, that's the thing about these women. Somebody asked me, well, what did these women have in common? And one of the things they have in common is they worked for years and years on their own stories, mostly using the medicines, using all the medicines at all different dosage levels. And they worked on themselves first. And then there's the statement pretty much from all of them was, these entheogens have been such a help to me, I wanted to share them with other people. To help other people. And so that was their calling. But that process took years and years. And as they moved into working with other people, they were often apprentices with elders, even to them. So those were people from the 50s and certainly the 60s, and Stan Grof included. And they really did their training in an apprenticeship, which means sort of sitting at the elbow, kind of sitting right next to them in ceremony and learning to see and intuit what their elder did. And so these are the elders we have now. These women are mostly all over 60. So it goes from sort of age 60 to late 80s.
Yay. Right. So, that is, so we're in this riptide now, right, of science proving folklore and all the studies at Johns Hopkins and whatnot, but also not only, entheogens being repackaged as therapy, which has, as you say, nuance, we love nuance, has value over there, but we want to acknowledge that it may be a slight taming, maybe a necessary preliminary, but we want to be creatively, whatever, because I like the saying, trust plants, not gurus, just for fun.
Yes. What I've been saying is that these women have a bigger vision of the medicines. They have a bigger vision than symptom reduction.
Right. Well put. Right. Because it's really, and it's Kat Harrison who says, again, the plants know the world is in trouble and they want to help us. And it's really like,
Yeah.
how do we become good citizens of the earth? And I just feel that the entheogens, the plants, and LSD, you know, want to help us to be good citizens. But I also love you honoring the shadow. In a talk I was giving out in California, I talked about Paul Stamets saying that the Johns Hopkins report said that, you know, mushrooms calm down the amygdala, increase cooperation in the regions of the brain, and encourage, you know, curiosity, confidence, and kindness. So I've quoted that a lot, and I like that. But somebody came up at the end of the talk and said, you know, mushrooms don't always calm down the amygdala. And it's like, that's true. You can fall
Yeah.
into spooky dread. You can fall into spooky
Yeah.
dread, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. People who've been working with these medicines for a very long time, they, not just these women, but I've interviewed men as well, just as part of the community, they all know someone who's been harmed and gotten stuck in something that's not a good place or even needed to be hospitalized. It's still a very small percentage. The medicines are very, very safe, but even Tylenol can be damaging to some people. So it just really depends how you're using it and the situation you're in. And so it's not that they're risk-free, they're just very low risk.
Right. And you know, it's interesting with the large festivals like the Eclipse Festival in August of 2017, anyway. And many festivals, there are entheo casualties, but
yeah.
there are also just responsible responders, well practiced, who may even be tripping or journeying at that point, who really know what to do. It's like there is
yes.
a collective community intelligence, you know, going, there you go, lad. No, let's see, there's this. And you address that in the book, too. You know, and Anne Shulgin, your wonderful interview with Anne Shulgin, just feel free to tell us about that. All blessings be upon her. She died
yes.
in 2022, you note. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just doing a memorial service for her this summer. You know, she had... These women who have been working for years and years, and she let me use her name because she doesn't consider herself an underground practitioner. And, of course, she was 90-something when I interviewed her. They were very careful with their intake when they would agree to work with someone. It was, of course, extremely confidential. But also they did very intensive medical interviews, and they had medical consultants they worked with. And they did a very careful medical history. But Anne did something else, and she would say, at some point during the ceremony, you might see a death door. And this speaks to a challenging moment in a journey. And her statement was, do not go through that death door. You will do yourself harm, and you would harm me, and you cannot do that. And it was kind of like a contract. I don't think it was written. But it was, I mean, it's enumerated in the book. She had a real contract with people. And so she understood that there's a point in some journeys where you can die. And that was how she framed it, that do not go through the death door.
Right. And then we have these more, I don't know if reckless is the right word, you mentioned so many people I know and have hosted on the radio, Rick Strassman, and I mean innumerable other people, once in being part of an entheo group, I'm like, oh, I couldn't take people to this group because the leader is so sketchy, but I'd love to find the source of his medicine. And then somebody said, I know the person
right.
who provides him. Anyway, so I went to that and was told, you know, the kind of most exciting part of the weekend will be, you know, Friday, where we have intramuscular injections of DMT. I'm like, ooh, never done that before. But it was interesting because there were people from all over who were all self-responsible and well-journeyed in many ways. And there were, you know, ayahuasqueras from Peru who'd come up just to check this out because it's so modern. You know, it's like we want to skip the ceremony and the ayahuasca and the throwing up. We want to just do injected DMT. And it was interesting because they were like, we'll check this out, you know. And afterwards, everybody else was like, whoo. And they were like, yeah, you know, interesting. Not our way. We like the tradition, you know. But my experience was that the intramuscular DMT, you know, I had to seek Terrence on the internet because I knew he had something to say. But what I had to say was, because I really thought I was dead. And it was not a happy thing.
No.
And my response was, if actual death is any less showbiz, death should get its money back. It's like, whoa. And Terrence kind of concurred with that, and it's like, whoo. So
Yeah.
do you have thoughts about, you know,
Well, Rick
that was.
Stockman stopped that study because he was getting such. This was a study he did, I think, during the early mid 90s. It was the first psychedelic resurgence of a study that was approved by the federal government, and he was injecting, intramuscular DMT, and people were having such weird experiences that were frightening and not at all therapeutic that he stopped the study. He stopped doing it. And he's a research psychiatrist, not exactly a clinician. And so this was not the most therapeutic approach to beginning to study these medicines. I don't know what he was thinking, frankly, because I'm not sure what value there is in just, entering other worlds kind of helter-skelter and just the weirdest of all possible worlds and having very intense experiences with scary images, basically. And people did
Well,
not do well after those sessions, so he stopped it.
right.
And
Well,
that,
it's a, it.
the shaman are very, many of them are very diplomatic, but they have centuries of experience. I mean, even more so than the women I've interviewed, of course, because they're in lineages where the information is handed down. And there are many tribes where the patients, the people coming, don't even drink the ayahuasca. Only the shaman drinks it. And it's really to connect with a universal source of energy and divinity that then comes through and through the songs is healing to the patient. So, I write in a
Yes.
book about my experience being in this Zoom ceremony where I don't drink and the shaman in Peru, who are in Peru on Zoom, sing. And I'm in the States, so there's no chemical involved. And I experienced very helpful healing from those Zoom ceremonies. So,
Right. Well,
we have.
we're No, absolutely. That's a remarkable part of your book that we will address. Oops, there's a helicopter right over my house for some reason. I think it's okay. It could be the
Yes,
reality
I don't
police. I
want
don't
to say
know.
anything.
No, that's okay. Right. Oh, it's gone now. I must have passed the check. They're like, somebody's talking about ayahuasca down there. Okay. Like, oh, it's okay.
Right.
So no, that's a remarkable thing because we want to honor, especially in the second half of our show. We'll take a short break in a minute, a very short break in a minute or so. But yeah, the reality of the plants and, as you say, the songs, the ikaros, which are very powerful. And you know,
Yes.
and it was also when I was addressing the issue of, you know, which we'll come back to because it's rich. You know, is because entheogens are also now, and entheogen-journeying groups are now a business. An expensive business, sometimes a business
Yeah.
that is the only financial support of people leading it. That's all they do, and they charge pretty high rates. And then it's the idea of, you know, people saying, "Well, the plants know what they're doing." Well, we'll come back to this. The plants want to reach people who have disposable income. It's like, okay, we'll wonder about this, and we'll wonder about this right after the break. My wonderful, perfect for now and all days guest is Rachel Harris. Her latest book is "Swimming in the Sacred: Women from the Psychedelic Underground." Super useful, wonderful, welcome. We will explore more after this very short break, and we'll be right back. Here we go.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She he showered his head with quasars and made his tallest cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Just a little sidebar. Sean Patrick Donahue and I are beginning our, well, we've sort of begun, but beginning our council journey Tuesday, May 9th at 6 p.m. East Coast, 3 p.m. West Coast, Celtic Trickster Plants and Planets. More information about that at coyotenetworknews.com. But in keeping with our show and what is central to my life, we're planning it as a kind of entheo-like journey without needing to take the plants necessarily, as guest Rachel was alluding to, the Zoom sessions where you take nothing but the shamans in Peru do, and it works, it works. So we're kind of working with that from Beltane to solstice, courtship to wedding. So coyotenetworknews.com if you want to find out more about that. So yes, guest today, wonderful. We're rehosting and always welcome Rachel Harris. She is author of Listening to Ayahuasca, my favorite book, really, on ayahuasca. And her latest book, Cultural Contribution, is Swimming in the Sacred, Women from the Psychedelic Underground, Lest We Tame Entheogens by Repackaging Them as Therapy. All right, so
I love that.
So I do love that. Well, because that's where we were, too, which is the complexity. You know, when I was talking to somebody who had been providing these medicines to this other person who had turned it into a huge money-making business, you know, and I go, and they said, well, you know, the plants know what they're doing. And it's like, I like that as a default. You know, kind of one way to think about it in our repertoire that we carry, going, all right, the plants know what they're doing. They want to talk to, you know, they want to reach wealthy people in the suburbs, you know, okay, why not?
I don't know about that, but you know, what the shaman from Peru said to me with the help of a translator is the plants want to help us. That's the message that I've gotten.
Definitely.
The plants want to help us. I found it enormously reassuring.
Right. And what you're saying about we can discern and you can guide us, you're so good at that, you know, ayahuasca and mushrooms and San Pedro, which is a mescaline-like thing, you know, anything. You know, and the DMT, and what you said about, yes, Rick Strassman and people doing the intramuscular DMT, not without merit. Very yang. I mean, you can see where modern advertising comes from because it's like bright red and yellow and thing. And my first journey with that, I was like, oh, I'm so glad to know that this world is always here, the geometric building blocks of creation. It's not the whole thing, but it is one thing. You know, and then when our guide said, and who wants to go again? I was like, yes, and up the dosage for me. And it's like, oh, no, that was like, there we go. Okay, there, then it's like death. Right, so,
yeah,
yes, but anyway,
right.
But there was
more,
there was
more,
one thing that I want to just...
More is not always better, by the way.
No. But there was one thing that I want to put before our shared altar here, which was, there was like 800 stories going on at once, and identity going, what if I die? Who's dying? There's nothing left, you know. But there was a room to the left in the world that I was in, and there was another person, and we were conversing, and he said, and if we do this and open this, then this amount of goodness can pour into the world. I'm like, what a good idea, whoa, and then I went off. But that takes me back to, you know.
Oh, wow.
It was too jazzy, but I think that's part of what I love in the entheogens, which is if we take the jazziness out, it's like, how can we participate? How can this expand our repertoire of partnering participation in the world. And I think there's a lot of us, let's see how to put this, there's a lot we want to offer ourselves to, or some better phrasing than that.
Well, this is a real calling, and we answer this calling in the best ways we know how. But, mm-hmm. you know, I hear sort of a yearning in you that you would have liked to have spent a little more time in that room with that that message.
No, that was that was enough.
That was enough. You got the message.
Yeah, that was a microdose of a message going, that's good, because then, you know, the DMT was like, well, off we go into death.
Off we go. One of the elders talks about this very same thing in something she told me, and she said, we are responsible for our intentions and our choices, responsible to ourselves and to humanity. So there again, you get this sense of it's not just an individual trip. It's what can bring more goodness into the world, responsible to ourselves and to humanity. What's the best we can do?
Right. And I think that that's, you know, in so many traditions of, you know, Eleusis and also the Asclepions of Chiron, the first mentor, it was always a healing dream to be conjured for oneself and the community.
And
both,
yes.
Right?
And that can sometimes get lost with the therapeutic approach.
Yeah. And it's what I call a Hinayana honky in a hot tub. You know, just personal salvation, you know, me, my trauma,
yes,
my importance. me. Because it ties also to your honoring of a whole great, you know, about creative expression. To outwardly, creatively express the inner invisible experience is then to glean its power, yeah?
Yes, that's a wonderful way of putting it. That movement from the inner world into the outer world in whatever creative or constructive way that you're gifted to do, that's a wonderful contribution. I have a quote from Gary Snyder, the poet.
Yes.
He says, because he's done a lot of vision quests, ultimately all such journeys are done for the sake of the whole, not as some private quest. Again, there's this sense of a much bigger vision for what the medicines can help us expand into and bring us to. So one of the things that, you know, the women say, if someone's life is not changing after a journey or after a couple of journeys, I tell them to stop and, mm-hmm. and take some more time before they journey again. They're looking for changes in the outer world as a result of the inner journeys.
Right. But some of your wise psychedelic underground guides say if somebody didn't experience change, I tell them to go back and do it again.
Well, you know, that's their process. They're not therapists. So if somebody's got something that they feel unfinished about or want more information, they feel that they're still in process, they need more help, that's when they say, let's do another journey and ask for what you need. So to go in with that intention.
Right.
So that is the process they follow. If somebody's really troubled or it's really clearly an old trauma or childhood history, then they might refer out to a therapist. But if they're kind of in the middle of a psychedelic process of unfolding, then they will say, do another journey. If they're stuck, if they keep doing journeys and nothing changes, they say, you know, let's take a break. They're aware of that.
Yeah, let's take a break. Or crank it up if you're, you know, a creatively impulsive person like
myself.
If you've
got stuff that's unfinished that you're caught in the middle of.
Well, now we're back to the creative expression. It's like Chiron, an actual little planetoid, but carries the myth of Chiron, who's the first mentor. And he does many great things. But he also founds, we have mythic figures, you know, founding real things, like Ceres Demeter founds the Eleusinian Mysteries. But Chiron founds the Asclepions. And part of that was, you know, dedicating to having healing dream for oneself and the community, and people had those. We have records, but they knew it was just common sense at the time, and we all have this humming in us too, that they would only have the power of their dream or their insight once they had given outward creative expression to the inner experience. Right? It's like in the therapeutic realm, it's like big difference. Insight about my father and what a tyrannical dingbat he was, and making an altar or a painting or a poem to that, then you have the power of the insight. Otherwise, it's sort of just a kind of credential.
Yeah, you're describing a wonderful creative way of working with something that might come up in a journey, and just talking about it isn't quite what integration is. There's a sense of embodying, feeling it in your body, rolling it over inside your psychic system, finding ways to express it and work with it. Someone just told me about an LSD trip they did where they had imagery of a wing that their part of their pelvic girdle turned into a bird's wing. And then after the journey, he went out into the forest near his home, and he found five wild turkey feathers on the path. And this is a path he'd been on many times because it's near his home, and he'd never seen any feathers. So now all of a sudden, he's got like a half a dozen turkey feathers in his hand, and turkey feathers are large. And so he brought them into the house, and he, with help from the internet, he figured out how to clean them and preserve them, and then he made them into an art object. And so that's that whole process of working with something that came from his inner imagery in his body during a journey, and then he finds that image in the outer world, in consensual reality, and then he transforms it into what will really be a shamanic instrument, but it's a piece of art that will have shamanic energy in it. So you get a sense of that whole process from the inside moving out into the outer world, and that's a wonderful transformation that you have a lot of different ways of describing that movement from inner to outer.
Right, with craft, right? And as our ally Max Dashy says, craft means power from dedication. And yeah, so but also it's we love that. I mean, we are pattern tracking beings, but we so love what you just described, I dreamt about a bird, here's a feather. That we're in the call and response, and that what we hope is
with
true,
the universe.
Really is true.
I love that.
Yeah.
Call and response with the universe, yes.
Yeah, that is our yearning. So that's and again, that idea, like, what we hope is true is true. It's like it is by God. And I think that's an interesting part of the conversation about entheogens. Like, do we need to but they, I think that they help us relax our defense or whatever, however we want to phrase this, our fending off wonder.
Yeah.
So we are more available to beauty and synchronicity.
Yes.
It's always there.
Yes. And we're more permeable to it. It can enter into us more easily. Yeah.
Well, a number of your guides talk about it as preparing for death.
Yes, and the studies at NYU have used psilocybin with terminal cancer patients, and the description is terminal cancer patients who are demoralized. In other words, they're in a lot of pain. They're not really able to communicate well with their family and loved ones, and they're just really they're struggling and having trouble. And one psilocybin journey, they have less pain, they're more available to talk with their families, their whole attitude toward their own demise is transformed. They're less afraid of dying, they're more interested in the time they have left, what's the best use of the time they have. And there, if you can Google and find, they've done videos of some of these people who talk about their psilocybin journey and about their death and how they've changed as a result. And one of the therapists on this team talks about this one guy, this one patient, had such a transformative experience that in his hospital room, as he was dying, everybody wanted to be with him, the nurses, the other patients. Everyone just wanted to be near this man. He just exuded such love, even in the process of dying, and that was part of his transformation from psilocybin. So this is a really important population, and it's a very classic way. I mean, the medicines that have been used for centuries, the phrases to die before you die, to prepare you for your own death, and so this is probably the most historical way the medicines have been used over centuries.
Right, and why they want to help us now, because it is the identifying with much larger whole big conversation, the whole cultural biological conversation, like, whoa, bigger. And that's, I think, what surprises us with some of the mushrooms, you know, it's not that happiness is a goal. It's sort of like it sneaks up as a little surprise. It's like, you know, oh, the beauty of the world. Why? I'm actually happy. Huh.
Yes.
Imagine that. And just, you know, and then it's not the point of the thing. It's like, oh, it's just there because we feel kinned with something larger and how beautiful things are. And then there is also, you know, and your conversation with Anne Shulgin and with everybody really is, there is the dark shadow. And you talk about, you know, your own experience of, you know, dissolution, limbo, integration, right? So there's a dissolving, which is also, you know, in the Villa of Pompeii, which is has incredible friezes. It's a woman's Dionysian initiation cult. And the first thing is it shows her being, the initiate being torn apart, dissolved and torn apart, right, as part one. I'm like, okay. I mean, that is
okay.
One. Yeah, that's, I mean, you write about knowing that yourself, yeah?
Yes, yes, yeah. One of the women says it this way, nobody escapes dismemberment.
Oh, but yeah, there we go.
But for me personally, what happened in the middle of writing this book, I had a third of my colon removed. So it was a big, this was, and a few other things they took out, you know. So it was really, they really flayed me open. This was the big surgery. And it was right when COVID was hitting. So I was in New York. And of course, you know, one of the best things you can do after a major surgery is walk. So I'm walking on the streets and the streets are empty. There's not a soul. There are no cars. I mean, this was, you know, it was April 2020, so right. The city was kind of empty or kind of eerily empty, and this is when I started doing those ceremonies on Zoom with the shaman in Peru, and this was the healing that they helped me with,
that
I could feel the Icaros really entering into my body on the inside of my pelvic girdle, which is, you know, where the incision went from one pelvic crest to the other, so horizontal right across my body. And I could feel the energy of the Icaros working in that inner space of the pelvis. And it was this is what it really helped me with. It was very, very clear.
That's
and
great.
So this is part of a dismemberment process, and it lasted much longer than I like to admit, much longer than I thought it should. Of course, that has no impact. But this went on for about a year. We were all isolated from COVID, and I was healing, and these ceremonies were very helpful.
No, that's great. Experiment, and I love that the Icaros, yeah, feel free to say a little more, the Icaros, the songs, and I first heard them, I heard pretend annoying nonsense alleged shamans doing it, going, no, that's not it. But then, then your great colleague
it.
And my radio guest, Joe Tarfer, when I heard his, I'm like, oh, they're so powerful.
Yes, they're wonderful. And he's working. This is how he uses the Ikaros to see into the body and to clean and cleanse and clear, you know, stuff that shouldn't be in the body to clear things out. So what was interesting is I think a year before I had I got this diagnosis from a colonoscopy, so everyone should have their colonoscopy on time. And so I was in a ceremony with Joe, and he says to me the next morning, he said, well, I could see you from the shoulders up and your head, everything was really clear. And then below that, things were just a mess, and I didn't have enough time to clear them out. And a year later, I find a diagnosis of a lump in my colon. So he was seeing some of the mess that he didn't have time to clear out. I don't know if it would have made a difference or not, but it wasn't cancer. I don't have cancer, so I don't have that worry. But a lump had to be removed. And so that's what I went through during COVID and during the writing of the book. And for a year, I really couldn't write. I wasn't writing. I was in a perfect situation to write, and I don't think I wrote a paragraph. And it was just my own inner work, and that's where the concept of dismemberment, nobody escapes dismemberment. That was certainly one of my times of dismemberment.
It's a
liminal time. Things are happening during that time that you're not always aware of or clear about. It's a time out of time. And it was like that for the whole culture because of this was the peak fear with COVID. Hundreds of people were dying every day. So this was a liminal time for the whole country.
Yes. And then just a little, the way I like to think of body parts that have been removed is they've gone to the spirit world. So a little toast to 3 feet of your colon going, right. 3 feet of Rachel Harris's colon has gone to spirit world where it's maintaining a connection. See, I like that, especially now at this Beltane full moon Taurus Scorpio, which is it's all about the backstage, invisible, in-stage, incarnational, sensuality conversation, which is so perfect for welcoming you and your book and your work, you know, and...
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it is.
Let me ask you a question, because you have this cosmic view of time and things unfolding. Why now? Why are the medicines coming now to help us?
Oh, well, you know, without presuming, but just, you know, many, many things. So in the beautiful dance that we're all a part of, one, it's also very specific. I'm just going to bring in a little part of yourself for a moment here. When you are born, Rachel Harris, your sun in Sagittarius, Mars in Sagittarius, at the particular degree of long-term vision to resolve climate crisis, thank you, and it squares your moon in Pisces, right next to little asteroid Vesta. So you're dreeing your weird, which is the reunification of kind of research and outward questing knowledge with deep, deep inward imaginal. And right now, as fate would have it, Neptune in the sky goes around every 165 years, and it is right on your moon. You're having an appointment now. And it does say to the Pisces part of all of us that is embodied in Rachel, you know, Neptune says, I am collective group mind. We're all in this dream together. And I'm talking to you, Rachel Harris, to say that what you hold most dear is increasingly welcome in this collective dream that we're all a part of. So there we go. That's part of it.
Thank you.
And it's also wonderful because it's right next to your little Vesta, whose image is a purged clergy officiates anew. It's about purging corruption out of priesthoods. Thank you.
That would be wonderful.
Well, you do. I mean, it's part of your dedication, your liberating dedication, which is standards and insight, and just the best thing in the world to be deeply you have Scorpio planets, deeply insightful with a kind heart. Like, that's the best medicine, to see how sketchy and horrible things are and to embrace it as part of the dream anyway. I mean, anyway, you're doing great. But I also think Uranus in Taurus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius in Taurus, which is about participatory animism. But let me throw it back to you, because we're in our last minute, and I have thousands of pages of notes we haven't gotten to. We'll have to do more of this. I love this.
Oh, goodness.
But the plants know the world is in trouble and want to help us. So I just give to you the last blessing, wish, insight, the last minute-ish kind of a thing. Mentors, antidote to the dementors. Back to you.
Well, part of my purpose in writing this book is to bring the perspective of these women, of a lifetime of working with these medicines, that we don't lose this in the flurry of the research studies and some of the financial hopes and dreams, that we don't lose the voices of these women who really have been coming from the underground and the underworld. We need to hear what they have to say.
Oh, that's very beautiful. And thank you for being their messenger. May we all be that.
Yes.
So again, our wonderful guest is Rachel Harris. Her really, really useful, proffering, kind, generous book, Swimming in the Sacred: Wisdom from the Psychedelic Underground. Swimminginthesacred.com is her website. You know, thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, wonderful, wonderful board up, and CoyoteNetworkNews.com if you want to find out about the Celtic Trickster Plants and Planets Council we are starting on this coming Tuesday, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. So thank you so much, Rachel Harris. Let us continue conversing by moonlight, by radio, by whatever, wherever the path opens. Thank you.
Sounds great. I love it.
All right.
Thank you, Carolyn.
You're completely welcome.